This is Eat Out In. The best food tells a story. It speaks of time and place and country. The aroma or scent of a single berry or leaf, a flower bud or a slice of fruit can transport us immediately to a field or a forest from our childhood. Great chefs understand that food is memory. And my guest on Eat Out In tonight is using her considerable talents to showcase Māori ingredients in her cooking. Celebrated chef Monique Fiso runs Hirakai Restaurant in Wellington, New Zealand, which was recently named by Time magazine as one of the world's greatest places. And Monique joins me now. Welcome to Nightlife, Monique.
Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. One of my chef colleagues and friends, Ben Shuri, who's a great Australian chef based in Melbourne, is a big fan of yours. So I've been dying to meet you and have a chat to you for a while. So thank you very much for finding the time in a very busy restaurant world for us. Now, Monique, Hirakai, the name of your restaurant is from the Māori language. What does it mean?
So it translates as hungry. And just breaking the word down, so the word kai, K-A-I, means food. So it was kind of a perfect name for a restaurant, because for most Kiwis, they could at least look at the word. If they didn't initially know what hirakai meant, they at least, most people could look at the last few letters and understand that it had something that was food related. So I was quite stoked when I was trying to figure out what the name of, Hirakai's a restaurant now, but initially I started out as a pop-up. When I came across that word, I was like, that's perfect. And I couldn't believe there hadn't been a restaurant called it before in New Zealand. It was sort of seemed meant to be.
Yes, serendipitous, absolutely for you. Yeah. Now, Monique, why did you want to showcase a local Māori ingredients at Hirakai? Because as you mentioned, I mean, this word wasn't even snaffled up by a restaurant. So there wasn't a lot of emphasis that other restaurants were putting on local Māori ingredients. Why did you want to showcase them?
I noticed that nobody had made a restaurant that was really heroing Indigenous ingredients, and I thought that was quite odd. And it seemed like a real shame to have all these restaurants in New Zealand and there wasn't one restaurant that you could point to and say, that restaurant is showcasing Māori and Polynesian cuisine. And being both Māori and Polynesian, I have a bit of Samoan heritage. I just felt like that was, yeah, so somebody needed to do it. And then I thought, why wait for someone to do it? Why don't you just do it?
Exactly. Why do you think no one had done it?
There's a range of reasons. I think there's a lack of knowledge out there about which ingredients you can use. So there was a lot of research that had to go into like how we were going to source these and like how to actually use some of the indigenous ingredients out there. Plus there's always been that like a bit of misconception about what is Māori cuisine and what is Polynesian cuisine. And you know, for the longest time, you know, the French have ruled fine dining. So nobody was really, and including myself as a young chef, you know, going back to the early days, this year will mark like 20 years of cooking.
Right.
Only 33. But, you know, like I think about like the early years, I mean, I was not thinking about cooking with my own heritage. I was looking towards, you know, French cuisine and Japanese cuisine, which was super on trend at the time. And I think, you know, it just never really got a look in until recently. And I think the timing of Hirakai was quite interesting because it was also a time where the whole country was really starting to embrace our Māori heritage and like put Te Reo Māori language into the mainstream as well as musicians, you know, releasing songs both in English and in Māori, whether they were of Māori descent or not. So I think that it's a range of reasons why no one had done it before. I think if you tried to do Hirakai 30 years ago, I'm not sure there would have been an appetite for it. But as times have changed and, you know, a lot of Māori culture is not seen as something that was not of value, but seen as something that is of incredible value to our country. You know, things like what we're doing have, it's been its time. I think it's, there's a lot of reasons.
Yeah. And Monique, how would you describe Maori cuisine?
How would I describe it? It's an interesting one. It is definitely based a lot on kaimoana, so seafood, and it's got some very interesting preserving techniques. And I think that comes down to the fact that New Zealand was so isolated. So by the time Māori got here from Polynesia or possibly South America, it's still up for debate, depending on which PhD student you talk to, that anything they brought with them didn't really survive. And the climate was so different and so much cooler that a lot of the vegetables, the gourds and kumara, struggled to survive initially, and things like coconut didn't exist. So a lot of what you had to live off on the land was moa, birds. There were no pigs, there was no deer. So it was a lot of use of either birds or small mammals, and a lot of finding ways to preserve those proteins. So if you look through a lot of history books, a lot of the meat was sort of hunted down and then kept in big clay pots covered in their own fat. So in a way, like, it was just like duck confit, only it was rat. And then there's a lot of the seafood out there, which is abundant. And when it came to plants, that was quite an interesting one, because there weren't things like Swiss chard and spinach and carrots growing everywhere. So a lot of the plants that were used were sort of used to help impart flavor into the food that was there. Uh-huh. So we still do that in the restaurant now. So a lot of the stuff we use, and if you read through the Heikai book, we won't use it in a salad per se, so leaves off maybe like red matipod, but we will use that tree to infuse into an oil to get as much flavor out of it or aroma out of it as possible. So it's an interesting cuisine. And
Monique, you've just released a new book with the title of your restaurant, Heikai, with a lot of the recipes that you produce in your restaurant. What are some of the ingredients? What are the Māori ingredients that you like showcasing in the restaurant? And can you explain to us what they taste like, what their properties are?
Yeah, one that we use a lot is kawakawa, which is also nicknamed bush basil. So it's quite a soft green leaf. It's from a pepper tree, and it's got quite a subtle peppery note, and it takes a while for it to build up. So for example, like if you put it into a sorbet or a marinade, you take a bite of something and then you wait a minute, and then suddenly your tongue will start tingling, and that's the kawakawa at work. And that's one we use a lot, and that's for both sweet, savory, drink, all sorts of things. It's a super refreshing, and it's a top favorite. Another one is Horopito, which is a slightly more fibrous leaf. With that one, that's also from a pepper tree from the same family, but it's a lot spicier. And again, we use that one in both sweet and savory. So for example, like we have a Horopito bonbon, and instead of using, making a chili chocolate caramel, we use Horopito in place of chili, because it's got that really like good fiery burst of heat. Often when we are coming up with different dishes and different recipes, we'll sort of look at would we normally use black pepper in this? And if so, can it be replaced with Horopito? So we often like switch it out, depending on what we're making. There's a lot. Manono bark's another great one. That's what you get from the manono tree. And when you take it off, you have to wear gloves when you take it from the tree, because it stains them bright orange, like yellowy bright orange.
Right.
And we dry that out and we use that in place of turmeric in a lot of things we do.
Right.
And we've also used it to infuse into different alcohols to give things a slightly earthy flavor. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I can imagine. And discovering a lot of these ingredients, I'm assuming many of them you wouldn't have come across or heard of before. How are you discovering them? Who is, you know, leading you on this journey?
Yeah, in the early days, it was a lot of reading through. So there's a lot of like rongoa books. So rongoa is like Māori medicine. And I would read through that and then try to figure it out on my own, which is not always the safest way to do things, about whether it could had a, you know, whether these ingredients that we use for medicinal purposes would also have a culinary purpose. And sometimes the book would have a bit of information on it, but most of the time they just stuck to the medicinal side. And then as time went on, I started seeking out people who might be able to help me figure out mainly a lot of the plants, which ones had culinary purposes and which didn't, because obviously seafood's a bit different. It's a bit, you get a bit more of an education on that, and there's a bit more out there to learn from. But the plants was like this big question mark I had. And I was introduced to a guy called Joe McLeod, who just happened to live in Wellington, which was perfect.
Yeah.
And he had spent a lot of time sort of tinkering around with things for the past 30 odd years. And he's a Māori gentleman, grew up on the Marae, was a chef in the 60s, 70s and 80s, had been retired, but just super passionate about cooking, about our food history, and did a lot of work in the community. And also just, yeah, really, really deeply rooted in Ngā Tahu, which is his iwi. So I met up with him and I told him what I wanted to do. And he goes, I've been waiting a really, really, really long time for a young chef to actually care about this stuff. So Lex, I'm going to tell you what I know. He's like, I'm too old to do this now, but it'd be good to pass this on to somebody. So, yeah, he just started teaching me a whole bunch of stuff. And then it was kind of like from that point, we were away.
You're listening to ABC Radio. This is Nightlife with Indira Naidoo. And for our Eat Out In tonight, we are meeting celebrated chef Monique Fizeau, who runs the Hirakai restaurant in Wellington, New Zealand, recently named by Time magazine as one of the world's greatest places. Monique is passionate about introducing and using Māori ingredients in her dishes, and she's released a new cookbook called Hirakai. Monique, when it comes to how to source these ingredients. So it's one thing to discover them, and okay, I want to, you know, use that bark or use that berry, but then in quantities that you're required for a restaurant is another thing. I mean, how are you sourcing them for your business?
Yeah, it's definitely quite tricky. So we actually recently changed the way we're operating the restaurant to allow us more time to source ingredients, as well as a better work-life balance, because hospitality needs that. But we have basically a lot of the foraging that happens is done by myself and the general manager, Katie Monteith.
Mm-hmm.
So her and I usually spend either a Tuesday or a Wednesday afternoon gathering things from different locations around Wellington. Sometimes we'll go on a road trip and we'll get the things as we're heading back towards Wellington. And yeah, there's just usually, you know, our dehydrators and all our preserved jars are constantly in use around here.
Right.
We've definitely like learnt that because you can't go out foraging every single day, that you need to be smart about what days you're going out to get things if you need to use them fresh, and then where possible, gathering as much as you can so that you can dehydrate things so you've got a steady supply for the coming weeks. But it's a real juggling act the way we do it.
Yeah, and takes
and
a bit of time.
And we've worked at it and worked at it because we've definitely been caught out a few times.
Yeah.
Someone's Yeah.
So you put a lot of effort in sourcing these ingredients and in, as you mentioned, collecting and dehydrating them and presenting them in these dishes that you've put together in your book, Hirakai. What is the reaction, Monique, when the diners come in and they try these ingredients for the first time?
It's really cool, especially for a lot of Kiwis who have not tried these ingredients before. And a common comment that we get in the restaurant is, I've grown up in this country, I am a Kiwi, I didn't know that you could eat all this stuff. Or I've ride my bike through this forest, you know, almost every Saturday, and I've gone past these plants, I didn't know that it could taste like this. And that to me is quite rewarding, and it's really cool to be able to give that to New Zealanders and show them what we have out there.
And what you're doing, the ingredients you're using, has given your restaurant a global presence. A year or so ago, Time magazine declared Hirakai one of the world's greatest places. How did you feel when that happened?
I didn't believe it. I thought I was being spammed. both the restaurant manager and I, it was quite funny. We looked at each other and we're like, do you believe it's real? And I was like, I don't know. Like, it just seems, it was such a huge honor that we called the number that was on the bottom of the email and it actually went through to Time magazine. And we were like, oh, we're just calling to make sure that we didn't just get pranked. I think they thought we were a bit silly. But it felt amazing because we just, you know, from the pop-ups to building the restaurant to building the team in the restaurant and just every step, in between, it felt great to be acknowledged in such an amazing magazine.
Yes, and for New Zealand cuisine and those ingredients to be given that international platform.
Absolutely.
Yeah, wonderful. And Monique, before you opened up Hirakai and came back to New Zealand, you were working in top-end restaurants in New York for a number of years. What was that like?
It's interesting. I've reflected a lot on that time over the past couple of weeks. I guess that always happens when there's a new year around.
Yeah.
It's like New York, it's been kind of heartbreaking to watch what's happened with COVID because so much of my, my 20s and actually like learning to become a chef happened in New York City.
Mm.
It's such an intense place. And I think if you are really serious about being a chef, it's a really good place to go to really, really test yourself because, you know, every person you're working with is just as passionate and as talented as you, especially when you're working in Michelin star restaurants at that level, that it really pushes you to become better. And I think, you know, it was super hard. Being a business owner is harder, but at the time, you know, for a young chef, it's super hard, but you just learn so much. And I definitely recommend it to chefs who really want to push themselves, especially, you know, Kiwis who are like, oh, you know, it's kind of hard now with COVID. And I really feel for young chefs in New Zealand, you know, they like had planned to go overseas. I'm like, when the borders open and everything's settled, like, you really go into cities like Melbourne or New York or London or just big food cities is so important as a chef, I think, to really build a wide skill set that you might not be able to get in a smaller country.
Mm. And you mentioned COVID having hit a number of those restaurants and friends and colleagues in New York. What effect has it had on the New Zealand scene? I mean, even though New Zealand's been spared much of the disaster that COVID has inflicted elsewhere, it has shut the country off, hasn't it?
It has. It's actually been really interesting to see what's happened in New Zealand and in the food scene. I think this has been a global issue for a long time, is that hospitality workers have worked pretty hard. You know, there's long hours, it's quite demanding. And I think there's been a lot of extra expectations on chefs and restaurateurs and sommeliers and front of house professionals over the past few years, thanks to things like TripAdvisor and Yelp and everything that, you know, has come along. And like, those things are great because they, you know, sometimes people do need to hear feedback, but I think it's also created a bit of a culture of people just working themselves, bending over backwards and forgetting to take time for themselves and look after themselves and their teams. And I think, you know, New Zealand, knock on wood, got a little bit spared with the borders being closed early. And it hasn't had too much of an effect on the amount of people visiting restaurants. Kiwis have been great at supporting Kiwi businesses and keeping things going. It's almost as if nothing has happened, and that we should be forever grateful. When I hear other people complaining about, you know, oh, COVID, this and that, I'm like, you know what? A lot of people have lost their jobs overseas, and so we really don't have much of a reason to complain here. But I think the one thing that came out of it, and it's, I've definitely noticed this in, particularly in Wellington, and for us at Heikai too, was it gave us a chance as a restaurant industry to stop and go, you know, like, do we really need to be open this many days a week? What can we do better to actually look after ourselves? You know, and I've noticed a lot of people have, like, there's been like this shift of energy in the air of, yes, we love what we do. Yes, we love being in hospitality, but we're also going to change our hours a little bit, or do a few less covers here and there so that we as a team can put our best foot forward by having more time to, like, to rest. And I've seen a lot of restaurants have done that, and same with us. And I think that's the biggest thing COVID taught us during the lockdown period was, okay, what about, you know, what you do is cool, but what about looking after yourself?
Yeah,
I think that's the biggest thing I've seen.
Yeah, right. Putting the rest back into restaurants, hey?
Yeah. Definitely noticed that.
Getting that
good.
Balance back.
It's good.
It is good. I'm speaking to Monique Fiso, who's the Celebrate Chef owner of Heikai Restaurant in Wellington, New Zealand, about her new cookbook called also Heikai, and also the wonderful Maori ingredients that she's using and showcasing in her restaurant, which gave it the Time magazine accolade, one of the world's greatest places to visit, which is wonderful. I want to ask you just briefly before I go to the restaurant you want to the recipe you want to share with us, Monique, what was your food background like? What sort of food did you eat growing up? What was your family's food environment like?
I had two very, very, very busy parents who I come from a family of five kids, so I'm one of five. So food was a little bit of a quickly get it over with sort of situation. But like, what was really cool was my Samoan grandma. She had retired, you know, many, many years ago while we were still in primary and high school, and she would come and stay with us during the week. So she'd be there Monday to Friday, and then she'd have her weekends, and it was to help out mum and dad. And she would make dinner all the time. So we had a lot of, there's a lot of Samoan food that I grew up eating. And that definitely influenced a lot of what we do in the restaurant. And I've definitely enjoyed being able to take some of those things that she's made and then give them a jazz up, and then put them on the plate.
Okay. What are some typical Samoan dishes then?
So like pani popos is a staple. It's the coconut buns, chop suey, not like the chop suey most people would know, but the chop suey, the Samoan chop suey version that really doesn't have much to do with chop suey at all, but
really?
It's got the same name. Who knows why?
What's in the Samoan version?
It's usually lamb that's been fried up, or beef that's been fried up with onions, and then there's like vermicelli noodles and soy sauce. Mm. And I think it has a lot to do with the Asian influence, like particularly the Chinese influence that's in Samoa. So there's actually quite a strong Chinese community there, and I think it's been there for a long time, and it's influenced Samoan food culture over the past 50 years. So you'll notice every time usually when you go to eat some Samoan style food, even if it's just a super casual lunch at someone's house, you'll often find a lot of the food has soy, ginger, lemongrass, sweet chili, and you kind of go, these are Asian ingredients, but it's like, yeah, but there's a huge Chinese population in Samoa, and there's a huge Indian population in Fiji, and same with across all the other islands. So there is this fusion that's happened from these communities being there, and it's quite cool. And I think a lot of people don't realize that's going on the South Pacific, but it is.
Wonderful.
It's interesting.
And it's wonderful you can incorporate some of that childhood food experience into the dishes that you do at your restaurant. Coming to the dish or the recipe that you want to share with Nightlife listeners tonight, we ask all the chefs and cooks that I chat to share a recipe that can be easily replicated, generally easily replicated at home. Rene Redzepi did his roast chicken. Maggie Beer shared her orange bread, a button pudding. Jamie Oliver did a cheesy cauliflower pasta. So, Monique, what's the dish recipe that you want to share with us?
The dish recipe I'm going to do is kumara roiroi with vanilla ice cream. So it's like a kumara pudding. So kumara being the sweet potatoes that we have here in New Zealand. But if you don't, just watch it out, because you probably wouldn't be able to get kumara specifically. You can use any kind of sweet potato and it should come out more or less the same.
Right, okay.
And I just find it really comforting. Plus, I have a sweet tooth, so this is definitely something that I like to eat.
So just quickly, just a few of the main steps. So what do you do to the sweet potato? Is it roasted or steamed?
Yep, so the sweet potato, really, really simple. Scrub them up, don't even peel them. Then get a box grater and grate the kumara. And usually, traditionally, you'd use a new season kumara, which would come out around about this time of year because they're nice and sweet.
Uh-huh.
But you can use, if it's the middle of winter, you can also use kumara, just add a little bit of sugar. So basically, get the kumara, scrub it, get it on the box grater and grate it down. And then basically press it into a baking dish and sprinkle a little bit of sugar. You can use coconut sugar, brown sugar. It's really up to you. A little bit of freshly grated nutmeg, a little bit of cinnamon. And I like to flick a few bits of butter in there and then just put it in the oven and bake it until it's almost like making a pudding, a very fast pudding gratin. And you just let it go for a while and then bring it out and cool it and then just scoop it out, and it's like a sweet, rich, like a sweet potato pie without a crust, and then a scoop of vanilla ice cream. It's just really comforting and delicious.
And so simple.
And a fun way to use sweet potatoes as opposed to just roasting them up with your lamb, as
all
we
right.
do here.
Well, that recipe for Monique's sweet potato pudding will be on the Nightlife website with all those other recipes from all the world famous chefs who have joined us for Eat Out In. Monique, thank you so much for being my guest. I've really enjoyed chatting to you tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Monique Fiso, who is the celebrated chef and owner of Hirakai Restaurant in Wellington, New Zealand, which was recently named by Time Magazine as one of the world's greatest places, joining us on Eat Out In, and her recipe for that sweet potato pudding will be on the Nightlife website.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.